Let's talk Italian food now. They came in their hundreds, sometimes in their thousands, to Australian rural areas as farm labourers, then later to the cities as factory fodder. They often came from hard lives on the land in war-torn Europe, with few possessions but plenty of recipes. Tomorrow is Italy's National Day, and for Food on Friday, we're going to celebrate what Italian immigrants have contributed to our cuisine and the way of life in regional Australia. And we'll be chatting with the experts. Chef Stefano De Pieri, star of the ABC TV series Gondola on the Murray, runs one of regional Australia's best restaurants at Mildura in Victoria. He's one of the greatest proponents of our regional produce. And someone who's done plenty of research on Italian migration is Loretta Baldassare, Professor of Anthropology and Sociology at the University of Western Australia. She's recently returned from living in Italy, and she loves her food too. I asked them both if they'd be celebrating Republic Day tomorrow.
I don't have to wait for the celebration to consider what I'm going to eat. I guess that in my job and in my private life, food looms quite large all the time.
We've got a bottle of olive oil and a loaf of olive bread on the table here. So
maybe we can munch a little bit on oil and bread, two very much-loved Italian ingredients.
Are you going to celebrate the day, Loretta?
My interest in this question actually is more about the anthropology of food and migration, and I think that food is, and I'm sure Stefano would agree, it's about nurturing and caring and sharing. And you know, we've got this very well-known stereotype about the Italian mama who expresses her love by endlessly feeding her family. And I think what's really special about Australia and Italian food is that it really was one of the ways that the way was paved for an appreciation of diverse migrant groups. To eat somebody else's food means you have to trust them. And I think when we reflect on how difficult settlement was in the early years for Italian migrants, and how misunderstood they were, and how there were many tensions between so-called Australians and so-called Italians, that's quite an achievement.
Now, Loretta, you've written, I'll quote from one of your papers, "It is hard to believe that garlic was once an unknown and highly suspicious food, that olive oil was only available from chemists in small glass bottles for medicinal purposes, that bread was prized for its ability to be cut in thin square slices, cheese came in silver paper melted into silvery, slippery blobs when cooked, that pasta was not a familiar dish, that wine was considered a foreign beverage for foreigners, and that tea was a far more popular drink than coffee." Now, what years are we talking about here?
It is remarkable, isn't it, considering all those things seem quite Australian now. In Western Australia, they first settled in the southwest around Pemberton and Manjimup, Diamond Tree. They were primarily failed group settlements. They were the British migrants that were brought over in the 1920s. Most of them walked off the land because they didn't have experience, and the Italians were ready to really take that on. Italians cleared the land there and established the dairy industry. They grew a lot of potatoes. But then on the East Coast, you've got really the amazing story of Griffith, you know, and the Murrumbidgee, where again it was the failed farms of the returned soldiers that were taken up by the Italians. And I mean, it's phenomenal, the increase in numbers. By 1933, the Italian presence in Griffith numbered 747, and it just grew exponentially. So there, you know better than me, Stefano, what they were growing, and I think I should hand back to you. But, you know, there was cane cutters in Queensland. That was very early on, and the Burdekin, and also Ovens Valley, Kings Valley, the orchard growers. And it wasn't until the post-war period, the massive wave of post-war migration, went with the diminishing of the White Australia policy and the 1951 bilateral accord with Italy, very important moment when Italians began to be seen as preferred settlers for the first time. And that's when you had Italians moving into urban areas and the proverbial fresh fruit and veg shop.
And the markets.
And the 7 day a week deli. You know, yeah. That's when you had that happening.
And you can see now in a present day supermarket that Italian influence. For instance, I was surprised and amused to see already packaged zucchini flowers. People for a long time didn't even know what zucchinis were. My first apprentice 20 years ago was washing zucchinis under hot water. And I said, no, you don't do that. But he didn't know. He didn't know what they were. And even though, you know, we're talking about Mildura, which was surrounded by, you know, Italian farms. But things like zucchini, artichokes, broccoli, they've all been kind of exponentially introduced into the market by Italian. One of the funny things that hasn't really taken off, believe it or not, is fennel. And fennel, which I adore so much and which has got such a large role in the kitchen, will probably disappear. I saw it again in the supermarket at 99 cents a kilo. That is obviously something that's not figuring in the diet of our Australian friends.
Well, or other immigrants. You'll be pleased to know.
I'm pleased. But there's some things that are being successful and things that, you know, are a bit dodgy out there. But we have never been able, in my opinion, to produce really good artichokes here. You know, they are second nature in Spain or Italy, but here they're always a bit difficult.
All right, just very quickly.
Yeah.
If you want to get the fennel consumption up, what's a good way to cook it?
Blanch it in salted water and then do it like a bake it with some cheese and a bit of cream or bechamel or something like that with a white sauce and give it a nice golden crust on top. You'll find that it's a great vegetarian dish and a wonderful accompaniment to anything else
you want to eat. Do you chop it up?
Yes, cut it into quarters very coarsely and blanch it quite in boiling hot water with salt in it until it is reasonably tender. Then straight in a baking dish, cover it with don't flood it with cream, but a little bit of cream and butter, or alternatively some very diluted white sauce, a good cheese, and it's a receptacle for all sorts of flavors. You can put a blue cheese in it, for example, if you want to give it more kick, or you can put in some chopped up, you know, humble stuff like bacon you happen to have in the fridge. So it, you know, that's pushing the boundary a bit, but it's just great with a bit of breadcrumbs
on top.
Yeah, breadcrumbs and bake it to golden. It's delicious. I had it last night. I taught my son how to cook it because he's a student and he needs budget meals.
What was it like for you when you arrived, Stefano?
Well, I was a kind of luxury migrant because I came in 1974 on a jumbo jet with Qantas. I mean, I paid $20, yes. And by 1974, things had changed dramatically, I think. Or we were at least beginning to see a surge in interest in all things Italian. It coincided with the government development of a policy of multiculturalism, 74, 75, 76. Then Malcolm Fraser continued on with the same policy, and so did Bob Hawke. I arrived at a time when being Italian was rather trendy and it was beginning to be quite fashionable.
Well, in my childhood, which was a little earlier than that, I was brought up in Wollongong, where lots of Italians came to work in the steelworks and in various other heavy industry. And I remember at school, in the school ground, swapping my Vegemite sandwich and my peanut butter sandwiches for salami and cheese. I thought it was great.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the others thought about a Vegemite sandwich.
But they wanted it. They wanted to feel Australian. Loretta, I believe you had an interesting insight into this when you were recently in Italy and you saw how Chinese migrants were dealt with, were treated.
Yes. I was living in Prato, which is next door to Florence, and Prato is currently home to the largest Chinese community in Europe. And this has happened over the last 20 years, so it's been a major upheaval and change. And it was a bit like walking back into 1950s or maybe 1920s Australia, where all of the complaints from the locals were familiar to me from my research on Italians in Australia. You know, they were saying they're smelly, their food is disgusting, we don't know what they're eating, they work too hard, they exploit each other. These were all the things that were said about Italians, you know, in Australia's history. Well, really, it's the universal migrant settlement history. And, you know, in Australia, we often, critics often sort of challenge our success in multicultural politics by saying that we promote and celebrate cultural diversity through food, and that's very superficial. But in fact, what I discovered in Prato was the town next door is Lucca, and the mayor of Lucca decided that he'd had enough and the townspeople had had enough, so they banned the sale of ethnic food. And that was last year, okay?
Goodness.
So when you hear that, you think, well, actually, it's not that superficial in the end, because it is such an intimate part of culture, isn't it?
Well, Stefano, you're very well known for promoting Australian regional produce and still cooking Italian food. How did you bring them together, and what got you interested?
Well, I got to food a bit by chance, but what crystallised my interest in food was, in fact, seeing what the Australian landscape with agricultural intervention, what it was capable of producing, and the kind of poetry, if you like. I know that farmers may not think of it in terms of poetry, but to me there's a certain poetic thing about the way in which food is grown and the way that Australian regional communities develop over time. I like the history. I don't like the fact that Aboriginal communities were displaced and the fashion in which they're still treated today. But there's a harking in me for the values of the land. I come from a farming family. So it was beautiful for me to leave Melbourne, to settle in a place like Mildura, and to see how agriculture was unfolding there. You know, the culture of blockies, which is Italian, which is Greek, which is Australian. It started off as an Australian thing. So that got me going. But two things I want to say about quickly before we forget. One thing, Loretta, is I just come back from Italy too. My sister-in-law, who's in her early 70s, is the only one in our extended family who still performs the role of mama. All the others who come below her, various ages, don't do it. They're too busy working and worrying about where their next cent is going to come in from, because there's a great crisis and unemployment is very, very growing by the minute. The other thing is, yes, there have been these really terrible attitudes to immigrants, and I saw them many years ago on my frequent visits to Italy towards the Moroccans. Now, gladly, I can report that the Moroccans in Treviso have got lovely shops. And all sorts of people go and shop in there. But yes, the Chinese have arrived and they've taken over the town of Mestre, which is that large industrial area outside Venice. And they have created, obviously, as you would expect, a world for themselves, a bit like Richmond was back in the 70s here. And of course, the Italians, who are so conservative in some ways, are reacting badly. But I hope that they will wake up to themselves and understand that we do live in the global village.
Can I ask you both, is the food that we eat in Australia today that we call Italian food, is that what they're eating in Italy now?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because I must report that I was extremely disappointed once again with the woeful quality of coffee making in northern Italy, at least. The use of UHT milk in cappuccino, you get froth and a weak coffee. It may be a personal thing, but I still say that the integration of milk and coffee is very much an Australian thing indeed, but it performed better in Melbourne than certainly anywhere where I come from.
What about you, Loretta?
Oh, look, I think food is a wonderful symbol and you know, way of expressing your identity. And so I like your question very much, because I think, you know, Italians are so regional, and that's why the Festa della Repubblica that we're celebrating tomorrow is quite a contentious issue as well, because Italians tend to define themselves according to region. So a regional dish that Stefano's famous for would be, you know, polenta and radicchio. These are from the Veneto region, from Treviso province in particular. And then, I don't know, Stefano, if you agree with me, but a national Italian dish is hard to sort of find. And I think maybe we could say tiramisu. I don't know.
Well, it was actually, Tani, you said that tiramisu was presumably born at the Beccheria restaurant, the back of Piazza dei Signori in Treviso.
Ah.
But maybe that has been. But pizza, obviously, is something, and some form of pasta and so on are all national things. But to answer Tony's question, I think that, yes, the regional, is the food that we eat here the food of yesteryear? I think the answer is neither, because the kind of food that was presented to most Australians, curious diners in years gone, was prepared largely by people of southern Italian background, largely. Would you agree with that, Loretta?
I would. And I think, you know, like in my family, for example, on special occasions, we will have a regional dish like polenta and radicchio and maybe coniglio, rabbit. Mm. But we'll also have tiramisu. And I think you have the Italo-Australian then dish, which you don't find in Italy, which here is considered quintessentially Italian, and that might be pizza with some pineapple on it, which still does not happen in Italy, but is, you know, considered Italian here. And I don't know, maybe, Stefano, there is also a second generation Italian-Australian dish, perhaps, you know, I don't know, I was trying to sort of push
chicken,
this metaphor
chicken
through.
Chicken parma is what my daughter's favourite dish, and she goes to the pub to get it.
And stag bog.
Yeah, it's still the great pseudo-Italian food in Australia, because good Italian cuisine is regional, and it relies totally on good ingredients. I know it sounds like a terrible cliche, but when you go over there, you do find those ingredients. Now, you don't necessarily find a young person who knows how to handle them well. In fact, no one cooks like my sister-in-law, you know.
Well, Stefano, I'm going to ask you what I think is quite a challenging question now. Would you rather eat an Australian tomato or a 69-cent canned tin tomato, given that Italian produce is so good?
Well, that is a tough one, because it raises all sorts of questions, and you want a straight answer. If possible, I would like to have an Australian tomato, particularly one grown in Shepparton by all my Italian friends. There was a letter to The Age complaining that the Italian tomatoes are very good. They don't contain preservatives, whereas the one from Shepparton have got, you know, preservative this and that and whatever other acid in it. And the first are supposed to be purer than the Australian one. I don't know about the laws that have to make obvious what's in the tin, but the Australian tomatoes have improved dramatically. They are a bit more expensive, but the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we want to gut Australian agriculture altogether? Do we want to go down the path of importing everything? That's the question. And to me, the question is simple. I love my rural life and my rural communities, and I desperately want people to focus on the fact that it's not for nationalistic reasons, it's for practical reasons. Do we want to live in country Australia, or we want to leave it all for the kangaroos?
Loretta, what do you see as the contribution of Italian migrants to Australian food?
Well, I would challenge Stefano's description of Italian food in Australia as pseudo-Italian. I prefer to look at it as Italian-Australian food, and to recognise that kind of as the contribution, that hard work and those early years really did lay the groundwork for what has become a success story, you know, for Italian acceptance, Italian-Australian identities, and so on. And as Stefano said before, let's hope that that is a trajectory that other immigrant groups, particularly in the new Europe, also follow.
Well, Loretta, we still have difficulties finding in most of Australia a bowl of spaghetti that's cooked properly al dente, with very good olive oil. I know there are a few restaurants to do that, and we can list them, but that's not the point. I think that Italian food here has spread its wing far and wide, but it's often of debatable quality.
Now, is that the same in people's homes?
No, people's homes are different. Yeah. We're talking about the general experience available to our Australian brothers and sisters, so to speak.
In restaurant, yes.
Is the quality of Italian food in regional areas better or worse than in the cities?
It's not
counting Mildura.
No, it's a very patchy thing. I mean, I always love telling the story that when I was a young chap and I went down to the Western District to some beach area towards 12 Apostles, I imagined that I could go and buy some fresh fruit at the farm gate. I didn't realize there was such something called the Western District, whether they only do one particular thing. So I couldn't find any food. So in some areas there is nothing or one thing. They're very good at doing one or two things. In some areas there is everything. I don't think you can generalize.
Okay, now on the table, we're going to finish up here with the two things we've got on the table here. We've got a bottle of extra virgin olive oil. Now, the European Union is now desperately subsidising the olive oil producers because the European Union European olives are close to collapse, and they're undercutting Australian olive oil now. So olive oil's pretty topical at the moment. I've got a loaf of bread here.
Have you got a good bottle of wine? Wine is not an industry.
Not in the radio studio. But there you go, Stefano. Piece of olive bread.
This olive bread.
Comes from a...
Now, you wouldn't have found this very easily in 1974 when I came.
Now, have a taste of it there. Sorry, Loretta, you're not in the same studio.
I'm missing out. but maybe Italian wines are a good example of how, a very real contribution from Australia. And often those Italian wines in Australia are made by Italian migrant families, aren't they? I'm thinking of Pizzini, for example, in the Kings Valley, and me, of course.
and the Italian varieties now are starting to become picked up by the bigger wine companies.
It's a fascinating story because I had the privilege, and it sounds like I'm bragging somewhat, but I had the privilege.
As you should.
Well, I was very fortunate to meet people with whom in about 12 years ago, we established the first Australian Alternative Varieties wine show, which has now become a big thing. At our first gathering, we could only find 16 Australian-made wines with funny names. Now, we get entries now for about 600 to 700 wines from different producers over different areas, etc., etc. And we have graduated something called Pinot Grigio, to official varieties.
Yes.
We are not taking Pinot Grigio into the show anymore. And that shows how much the wine industry has changed and continues to change.
Well, here's to plenty of bread, wine and olives tomorrow for the Republic Day of Italy. Thank you very much, Stefano De Pieri, chef and writer and television host and all sorts of things. Professor Loretta Baldassare, Professor of Anthropology and Sociology at the University of Western Australia. Thank you very much for our time.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And if you are celebrating Italian Republic Day today, make sure you choose a wine with a funny name.